I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our show, Kat Bohannon is out to change the conversation about evolution. She's the author of a best-selling book that centers women in the evolutionary story and traces how women's bodies have evolved and adapted to advance the human species. It's a fascinating book. It's called Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution. So Kat Bohannon joins me to talk about it Monday on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday on the Arts. My next guest is Marco Merrick, the founder and director of the Community Concert Choir of Baltimore. The choir was formed back in 2010 to help preserve Black sacred music. They are performing this weekend at Grace United Methodist Church, and in a couple of weeks, on June 8th, the choir will make its debut at New York's iconic Carnegie Hall. Here's a taste of the choir in a live performance from New Shiloh Baptist Church last year. The Community Concert Choir of Baltimore, and Marco Merrick joins me in Studio B. It's good to see you, my good friend.
It's great to see you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, one of our mutual friends, Maurice Murphy, who passed some years ago, you say, well, now they got something to say. when he heard something that he likes, they got something to say. You do have something to say with this wonderful choir. Who are your singers? Where do they come from?
They come from everywhere, Tom. The hub of the singers, really the core of the singers, are really Baltimore folk. They are from many places, cross denominations and ages. And we are fortunate that I think because the choir's impact has been such that we've had a draw on folk from out of the community. So there are singers from the Washington corridor, Virginia, Philadelphia, New York, Boston. A singer is in rehearsal last night all the way from Jacksonville, Florida. We had a member in Vegas who relocated to the area. There's a charter member in Los Angeles. So it's the community concert choir that has become a community of many communities.
Yeah, many communities. And of course, a lot of that is a testament to you as the Pied Piper. I mean, they come because they want to sing with Marco.
Well, I hope that we're doing something that brings joy not just to the audiences, but for the singers. And I really believe in the mission to preserve and promote the sacred music of the African American church. You know, as an artist, that there's a message contained in what you do. And for me, it's ensuring that the singers internalize whatever the import of that message is, and across the genres, be it the Negro spiritual or the hymn or the Western European anthem or the gospel music, they all have a message. And if we can convey that message very effectively, then what's coming from us then is received from the very place that it comes, and that's the heart.
Yeah, and you mentioned all those different styles, all those different subgenres of music, and you cover them all. You cover the waterfront here. You don't just do only gospel or only spirituals or only anything. You really want to make sure you have a really broad, diverse repertoire.
Well, that's the richness of the African American church, in that music it spans the experience of our forebears. And so as the establishment of the Black church was, it inherited, of course, naturally, the indigenous music of Black people, which is that slave song, the Negro song. However, when those churches were formalized, in many ways, our forebears were also, because they were property of They were enslaved by those who were Western European Christians who were colonizers here, and they were exposed to those traditions that were then part of the establishment of the church. And so part of that music is so much ingrained in the church. And what the enslaved people did was they imbued that music with their own pain and suffering, their own joy, their own fortitude, their own happiness. And so that music, again, is interpreted in a way that comes from the soul of the people who very much are the forebears of the establishment of the cross denominations of Black church in America.
And when you take your choir to Carnegie Hall, you know, which is the iconic epicenter of art music in this country and has been for more than 100 years, what repertoire are you going to bring? Because you're going to bring not only repertoire, but you're going to bring Baltimore. I mean,
yes.
You are a community of communities, and you mentioned, you know, the far-flung places where some of your folks come from.
Yes.
But Baltimore has a wonderful, rich tradition of singing and choral music. You're going to bring that to Carnegie Hall. What do you hope to show those
New
Yorkers up there?
A sage told me years ago, wherever we go, we take ourselves. And I'm Baltimore. I'm Baltimore born and bred, and Baltimore from my parents who were born in Baltimore and grandparents who were born in Baltimore, then great-grandparents who came here from the South. And so to understand that what I experienced growing up in Baltimore Church resonates through me and to others. And so when we go on that world stage in Carnegie Hall, much of what we will share, of course, will be, again, crossing the genres. We will begin, as we do with all of our concerts, with the Negro spiritual. And we will do those songs of vibrance and vitality. And we will sing the Western European classical pieces. We will sing some variation on hymn tunes. And we will culminate. The finale will be a collaboration of pieces of Richard Smallwood, who is iconic in and of himself.
Great gospel
And so,
artist,
yeah, to do
right?
that gospel music. So we will bring ourselves. And so that is what Baltimore is like. You don't have quite an experience of Black church music until you have it in Baltimore. And I have colleagues and friends from across the country who actually came to Baltimore to do church music because they wanted to be in the setting in Baltimore.
And the tradition of Black choral singing, even outside the Black church here in Baltimore, is also huge. You have a longstanding connection to Morgan State University, the great Dr. Nathan Carter, who took his choir all over the world. That tradition continued by his successor, a wonderful
yes.
artist who's a dear friend of both of ours, Dr. Eric Conway.
Yes.
I mean, every summer that choir goes all over the world.
They're in East Asia right now.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. You know, the phrase over at Morgan is, you know, join the choir, see the world. and that's what happens.
And that's what happens. But I'm so glad that you brought up Dr. Carter and so many other iconic folk who have poured into me. You know, I came to know you through Dr. Carter.
Sure.
And so to understand, again, this community is so, it's like an embarrassment of riches in terms of the kind of musicianship that we have had and the kind of exposure that Baltimore has had as a result of the rich music, both in our churches, in our community, and to see, you can go almost anywhere in the world now, and somebody who has been touched by Dr. Carter or Dr. Conway now, or the Morgan State University Choir, is actually performing and presenting and educating, you know, in the music place. And so we are very fortunate in Baltimore. And again, I could run a whole anthology of names of people, whether they were, you know, choir directors or organists or pianists or music educators. I remember growing up in public school in Baltimore. Much of the music that we heard and sang in church, we heard and sang in school. It was not they were teaching music.
Yeah.
So there was no
and
real
And places
definition
like Douglas High
that.
School had an incredible
oh,
jazz
my goodness.
Band, the
Absolutely.
Jazz program there, Ethel Ennis and mm-hmm. So many other, you know, great jazz artists, you know, had affiliations with schools, not just at the college level, but at the high school and middle school level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there is a great tradition of Black artists in this town making music. And for years, decades, generations, they did it kind of separate and distinct from the Baltimore Symphony or the Baltimore Opera or the groups like mine, the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. Mm-hmm. That's breaking down a little bit. But boy, there's a long way to go when it comes to sharing these traditions with people outside the African-American community.
And what we had, I know that generations before mine, when there was no place often for African-Americans to really perform, the church was the stage. And even in getting their formal training, all too often it was the church. And then, of course, you had places you'll hear about, the Royal Theater. So folk on their way to places like New York came to Baltimore. Because if you could make it in Baltimore, then more than likely you could get on those stages in the world.
And the churches, well, for example, New Shiloh Baptist Church, which the minister of which was Nathan Carter's brother.
That's right.
For many years.
Dr. Harold Carter.
Harold Carter. Mm-hmm. They started a music school.
Absolutely. You know, more than 30 years now.
Yeah, long time ago.
Yes, sure. But I remember music programs, again, all too often, the same folk who gave, when I was in piano studios with individuals who taught, they were part of churches who also had music programs. There were so many of them. And I could never think of standing on, having this opportunity to stand on Carnegie Hall stage and not remember my own upbringing in Shiloh Christian Community Church in Southwest Baltimore. I was a child of the 60s. And again, our churches had these music standards. So I called the names of Kenneth Dean and Jay Mansfield Mitchell, Lois Smith, Daisy Johnson. These were folk who were iconic in church music, but they were also in the community, and they cultivated a love for, an excitement for, but a standard of excellence, which I'm so grateful for having had that exposure.
And you're going to give kind of a preview of the Carnegie Hall concert at Grace United Methodist Church Sunday evening at 5 o'clock.
That's right.
That'll be kind of a run-through, I guess.
Well, I think in many ways it'll be more than that. I think those who come to Grace on Sunday will experience much more than they'll have the opportunity to experience at Carnegie Hall. And so, again, we are thrilled that in these beautiful churches, these beautiful spaces in Baltimore, our choir has the opportunity to present its signature concerts, and Sunday being one of them, the annual spring concert.
Yeah. And how many singers will you take to New York with you?
New York will have about 104. So we're just on the other side of 100 singers that will don that stage. And we are thrilled that just as many VIP underwriters from the community in Baltimore are also coming. They won't be traveling with us on Saturday. They will be there on Sunday to be part of that experience, be part of a special dinner, reception. And then there are others who have also signed on because they're going to meet us from other places in New York. So we're thrilled to have these supporters and to have the community be as responsive to the choir.
So as we finish up here, give me a sense of the schedule. How do you get a dress rehearsal on the stage? You know, will your singers have some notion of what it's like to be on the stage at Carnegie
absolutely.
Hall?
Well, we will leave on Saturday, and our first rehearsal will be at Fordham University in New York. And then Sunday morning, just a couple hours before the afternoon performance, we will do the dress rehearsal in Carnegie Hall.
Yeah. And you have a number of wonderful keyboard artists who play with you, who are involved in music education here in town
again,
at City College High School.
Like any conductor's, director's, you know, dream to have the hands of Patrick Alston and Marcus Smith as our accompanists, and then also able to take our timpanist, Bobby Harris, who was a music educator, and Nicole Ross, I'm so thrilled that we have a woman who is our percussionist, who's just quite dynamic with what she adds with the choir. But to have these individuals who are, again, you know, imbuing in generations, they're students that they have now for Patrick now for more than 20 years. Now, and Marcus, who is well into great career, and I'm proud that they alum of UMBC, Morgan State University, Towson University, Peabody. So we're excited to have, again, homegrown folk and how they have also matriculated through these fantastic institutions.
Yeah, and they work with your wonderful choir, but they're also so much involved in the fabric of music and fabric of the arts here in our town. So let me ask you an unfair question. If I were to ask any of your singers, Why is it that you sing with the Community Concert Choir of Baltimore? Because it's a time commitment. I mean, you got to get in there. You got to learn your music. You got to do it. And they'll say, it's because of Marco, because we like singing with Marco because he's a dynamic. He's wonderful. You are a wonderful keyboardist.
They don't say how brutal I am?
Well, they mentioned that too, yeah, okay. But with a smile.
Yes.
But what do you think? What do you think the reason is that so many people, hundreds of people, come week after week to rehearse and perform?
Let me share a very compelling example of why I really believe people come in. Last Saturday's rehearsal was a member, one chorister, who had literally just an hour before rehearsal interred her 22-year-old granddaughter, a grandmother who would not miss choir rehearsal even on the day of her granddaughter's funeral. We were there with her. We were supportive of her, but I said, you can't come to rehearsal. She said, oh no, my granddaughter's at peace. We did everything we could do. She had a considerable illness. But she said, this is what I need. And so I believe that members come from Florida and Boston and New York and folk in Baltimore. Sad to say that many people are singing in our choir and doing this music because that music is not happening in their churches anymore.
Mm.
And so this meets a need, not just for the singers, but for the audiences. We have to turn people away at concerts. And I know that people are hungering for and thirsting for the music. So bigger than Marco, and it's even bigger than music, it is a community. It's a community choir, but the choir in and of itself has become a community of love and caring and sharing. And so that piece, the centerpiece, is music, but it's a community.
Marco Merrick is the leader of that community, the founder and director of the Community Concert Choir of Baltimore. You can hear the choir Sunday night, 5 o'clock, Grace United Methodist Church in North Baltimore, and they will appear at Carnegie Hall in New York on June 8th. Break a leg, my friend. Have a great trip.
Thank you, Tom.
And up next, Midday theater critic J. Wynn Russick shares her review of Lempira, the new show at the Baltimore Rock Opera Society. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.